This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast, the Friday night preview show, because it is Friday and we're only 3 minutes late. I think that's broken all records for us, but there you go. But it proves that it's live, of course. And I am very much alive, even if it is a Friday. And I, of course, am Stamford Chidge, and I am joined, as ever, by the well-travelled, weather-worn Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Yes, up to grim Leeds in the far reaches of the north of England. How did I make it? Hours and hours of travel and a lovely, lovely victory, and then back home and recovering for weeks and weeks in a decompressorized chamber, whatever you call it. Anyway, I'm talking about it. Yeah, lovely to be on the show.
Yeah, good to see you. It always helps when we win, doesn't it? And we'll be talking all about that, obviously. But who have we got on the show tonight, JK?
Wit, knowledge, what else?
But what about you guys?
Oh, it is, of course, the excellent Martin Wickham.
Hello, everyone, and a late substitution as well.
Yeah, that's right. Because Clayton is in the doghouse, having had too much football last weekend. So we've recruited you as our.
I did see him Sunday as well, because popped along in King's Meadow. So
I know
he's Andreas Christensen injured in the warm up.
Something like that. But a self-inflicted injury, I believe. But there you go. And as you've also heard, for a second week in a row, this time live and direct from England, not Portugal, we have the absolutely lovely Liam Toomey from The Athletic. Good evening, Liam.
Hello. Yeah, I figured it was an easier commute to Wembley from London, from where I am now.
Yeah, many would say it isn't, actually. Me included, actually. I'm not looking forward
twice
to
it. Twice in a week, Kitch. Twice.
I mean, actually,
I live next door to Wembley and it's a ball ache.
I know. Well, in all seriousness, tomorrow, I think, is the first time I've had to venture forward to Wembley from Winchester rather than Pimlico. So that's going to be a bit of a chore, but there we go. C'est la vie. I'd rather be doing it than not doing it, that's for sure. Now, before we get into all of that, part one, obviously, we're going to have a look at the Leeds-Chelsea match, and we'll catch up with Liam on the press conference from today with Mr. Tuchel. Part two, we've got a fantastic opposition view again. We've got a very special guest coming back on the show, having been on it when we last played Liverpool, the fantastic Tony Evans, who is a highly esteemed and estimable football writer. And then part three, of course, we're going to wrap up with our own preview of the FA Cup final. But to kick it off, I mean, you know, on Monday we were, you know, I think understandably twitchy about this particular match, but bless me, the boys, I think, you know, it just goes to show, really, JK, doesn't it, when you score an early goal, we've been saying this for weeks, when we score an early goal it becomes a very different game, and when we don't score an early goal it becomes interminable and we twitch and we freak out and invariably we throw a result away. So well done. What beautifully worked goal as well, actually, it has to be said.
I think, yes, the confidence of the team was just fantastic after the goal. And I think also it's so dispiriting for the opposition. And that's the trouble. It doesn't matter how much you you run rings around them. But we scored the goal and then ran rings around them. And they just, they weren't very good. But at the same time, I think they were heavily demoralised by both the way we played, which was great, as Tuchel said, great precision, energy, and the right approach to the way he wants them to play in that situation. I think also tactically he was on the money. I think he played Mount in a slightly different position, so they came through unmarked on several occasions when they weren't suspecting that they would have so much space. But Mount played out of his skin. Reece James was fantastic. I love the fact that Mount, when Mount plays well, he seems to get into a position when the team's playing well. They play these wonderful triangles, Pulisic and Alonso on the left, and he's playing them with Reece James as well, just by the corner flag, and they get the ball across really quickly. And Lukaku, of course, was about £50 million worth.
Yes, I loved your comment in the fan bite. He's worth, well, I don't know, maybe 50 million quid.
Yeah, about 50 million. But I know it was a much better performance, is what
it was.
Expect.
It was. Well, as you said, all round, I thought Pulisic was really impressive, Martin.
Yeah,
I thought Mount and James were, you know, the yardstick again. Best players on the pitch for me. And I thought it was really nice to see Chaloba get a recall.
Yeah, we thought he was in the doghouse for some strange reason. I think some of that was utterly ridiculous reporting that there'd been some sort of he'd been shown his mistakes by Thomas Tuchel, and then someone pointed out, hello, welcome to video analysis, all clubs do it. Yeah, it's just good to see him back. Helped by Leeds being incredibly shit, although admittedly in the first 10 minutes I did tweet something along the lines of this could be 7-5, because I think our defence resembled an automatic door to start with, then settled down a bit. Early goal always helps on main proponent of that, score early and then all the shit housing and time wasting is going to have no effect. And Leeds, you know, proved it's possible. You can't, you know, there is a fine balance between putting pressure on a team in a hostile environment and just being thuggish. And Leeds went way over the other side because they decided, we can't play football, so we're just going to kick the shit out of people. To my shame, I reacted the same way as Sky did when James got red carded, because what the fuck's that for? I actually thought he'd been red carded for dissent, because there was such a pause between the foul, him saying something, and then the red card getting produced. And then I've watched the replay and gone, yeah, you can't really kung fu kick people in the ankle. It's not right.
Oh, mate, it was a leg breaker. But you're right. I mean, even the ever so not biased against Chelsea commentary team from Sky were slightly surprised, and then saw the replay, and it was just so obviously a red card. I mean, red card for you, Liam. I mean, it's a pretty nasty challenge, wasn't it? And of course, it now seriously jeopardises, which I think is very sad. It jeopardises Kovacic's chance to play in the cup final. Of course, he's got history in cup finals, and I suspect he was looking forward to try and putting it right.
Yeah, absolutely clear red card. And yeah, you could see in Kovacic's face afterwards, even as he was being abused by fans behind the visiting dugout, you could see in his face that he thought he was going to miss the cup final. So, which is why it's a bit surprising to hear Tuchel say that he's even in with a chance. And even stranger to hear him say that, I'm pretty sure he said that, you know, I was watching today on the press conference. I'm pretty sure he said that there was an existing tear in one of the ligaments, and that almost helped Kovacic.
Because
he already had a sort of hyper flexibility in his ankle that you wouldn't normally have because of the injury that he was carrying. Mm. And it sort of almost limited the damage.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there, obviously. You know, I didn't even see it, but I did read up on it afterwards, and I took exactly what you have from that, which it does sound a bit weird, but there is kind of some weird logic to it. I mean, let's hope he has a chance. I suspect not. We'll get on to that later.
The reaction to the Leeds crowd was just completely appalling.
You were not happy with them at all, were you?
I thought it was.
What do you expect? They hate us.
I know. But
and they're ignorant.
Called rent boys as a consequence of somebody almost having broken their leg, and nothing happens about it. And also, he's only a poor little cockney.
Hey up, lad, it's just banter.
Yes, that's what they'd say, yeah.
Mate, you just need to go up to the... I mean, this is not just a Leeds thing, by the way. I'm going to be, I suppose, quasi-racist about Yorkshire people here. You know, I go to Headingley a lot for the test matches. You just have to sit on the Western Terrace for a test match to get an idea of what they're like. Boorish doesn't even cover it.
No.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so there you go.
Now, there is that Twitter account that is just called "Of course it's Yorkshire," and you can work out the content on there.
What's this, like that MP, isn't he? Who's got himself into trouble about food banks?
He's
Lee Anderson or something.
He's thicker than a fucking castle wall.
There was somebody put one of the Fast Show sketches on with Harry Enfield playing a Yorkshire.
Oh, George Whitebread.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
I got two words for that. Shite.
What's the other one?
Shite.
Exactly. I know. I hadn't seen that for years. It really made me cackle.
He actually going to take this onto cricket very briefly. That sketch, I think the one you were talking about, actually predicted the Yorkshire Cricket Club racism scandal.
Really?
Look at it again and look at what he says to one of the people in the room.
Yeah. You'll never play for Yorkshire.
No offence, lad. You'll never play for Yorkshire.
Anyway, we have Yorkshire people in Mixlr, so we're going to rein it in. Anyway, moving swiftly along, JK. Oh dear. What on earth do we do about Lukaku? I mean, he played well the other day, and he scored two goals. I thought he played well. Thought he was even better last night. Scored. I mean, the goal was a bit of a farce because he should have actually put it in first time and almost made a meal of it. But he scored a really excellent lob, which was only a Natcock offside. I thought he was brilliant last night. I mean, he's now scored 3 and 2. What the bloody hell are we supposed to do with him?
It's what we're supposed to have bought, isn't it? He makes an effort. You wonder, why isn't he making an effort? It's all down to making an effort. He was actually running really quickly.
Maybe he's looking for somebody to buy him.
And well, there was always that possible. Or perhaps he was trying to influence the new owners not to sell him. I don't know. Even he's had a go at the agent, hasn't he? The agent has.
Well, I'm going to talk whether
that's true or not.
Talk to Liam about that in a sec because he might have some info that we don't. But I think just on the footballing side, I mean, I know we've been coating him off for weeks, and I think, frankly, fully deserved.
Absolutely.
Fully deserved. But actually, we're quite simple folk supporters. If you do what you're supposed to do, which is to play bloody well and score lots of goals, we will love you. It really is that simple. Put in the effort, do your job, we will love you. Stink the place out, moan and sulk, you can fuck off, basically. I mean, we're very simple football supporters, I think.
It's caused us now to debate whether he should be picked tomorrow, hasn't it?
Well, we're gonna. I can't wait to tuck into that one in part three, but that's going to certainly kick that one off. Liam, because I think why not just meld the presser into what we're talking about generally really kind of makes sense. Somebody, I don't know who, asked a question of Tuchel about the fact that his agent's been sounding out about having a meeting directly with the owners, as in Ted Bowley, I presume, i.e. bypassing Tuchel. Tuchel absolutely got the point and said, well, that sounds like he doesn't want to have a meeting with me, and he's absolutely welcome to if he... And I love the what he said, if he can get a meeting, which I thought was very good. And then, of course, Lukaku puts an Instagram post out saying, it didn't happen, never happened. I have to be honest, Liam, I'm 56 and horribly cynical. Bullshit, I'm crying. I think he probably did. Well, I think that Lukaku is involved in that and wants to go, so I'm not having that. It's easy to say, I didn't.
Well, whether or not he wants to go is, I think, a slightly different matter to what's happened today, where, you know, Federico Pastorello, who it must be said has had a very long-standing and good relationship with Chelsea as a club, dating all the way back to, I think, the late 90s. I think he was involved in some of the deals to bring the Italians to Chelsea back then. And he certainly maintained that during the Abramovich era. He took over. Lukaku's already switched agents once. Because he was a Raiola client, of course, when Chelsea missed out on him in 2017. And Pastorello took over and I think, you know, his connections at Chelsea probably helped facilitate that deal, as did the £97.5 million. But a large part of me thinks that you've kind of failed as an agent when your own client is issuing statements saying he doesn't speak for me. Because that's literally your job to speak for them privately, usually. It's very unusual for agents to give interviews in public. And when they do, it doesn't usually work out very well for anyone involved. It just usually generates noise. As Tuchel said, you know, after Lukaku Sky Italy interview back in December, it generates noise that we don't want. And again, this has come at a very inconvenient time for everyone associated with Chelsea. It's on the eve of an FA Cup final that Lukaku is hoping to start. Lukaku has as you've discussed, you know, shown much greater effort and much improved performances in the last few games. He clearly wants to try to finish the season as well as he can and be a part of any success that Chelsea do have. And he's at least showing a willingness to get some sort of productive relationship with Tuchel back, because I don't think it's really been there for most of the season. And comments like Pastorello's just kind of torpedo all of that, because of course they're waiting. Agents of every Chelsea player are waiting right now. You know, there are quite a few players that are assessing their futures, whether they're out of contract soon or not, or maybe they're weighing up, you know, when to open contract talks. There are all sorts of reasons why Chelsea first team players and their agents are waiting to see what happens with this ownership situation, sort of waiting in line to try and talk to, not necessarily Todd Boehly, but if it's Marina Granovskaya who stays in place or whoever the new football executive might be. So I didn't see any need for the comment, really.
When was that interview done, Liam? Sorry.
Well, this is the other aspect, isn't it?
Well, the bit that stood out to me was, we don't know who the new owner is going to be. Now, if he gave that interview a few weeks back, okay, fair enough. Todd Bowley's had preference for the last week. So if he's said it in the last few days, it's just fucking stupid.
Well, that would suggest, as you say, Martin, that there's probably been a lag time, as there was with the Lukaku interview, which took about 3 weeks to be published and was eventually, when it was published, it was published horribly out of context because Lukaku was actually playing reasonably well, as he is now. That's the other problem with doing these interviews as an agent, full stop. But you can't control when they're run. Once you answer these questions, the journalists, the media outlet are in control of how they manage the rollout of that. And they usually do it, you know, on the eve of a big game. That's what they did. That's what Sky Italy did in January, you know, sort of on the eve of the Liverpool game, which got Lukaku dropped for that. And that's what has happened with this Pastorello interview as well. It's been run on the eve of an FA Cup final from Chelsea's perspective, that Lukaku was hoping to be potentially the happy end of a very, very difficult and miserable season for him personally. So, yeah, it's a mess. I don't know what Tuchel's going to do tomorrow. I can't imagine any of this has helped Lukaku's chances. And I to be honest, I interpreted his statement on Instagram to be very much damage control rather than any sort of I don't think there's anything pre-planned about any of this. I think he's trying to scramble to show, look, what you've seen on the pitch is real. I do want to try and make this work, and I want to try and make it work at Wembley.
It's one of those annoyingly, frustratingly, you know, things that we will find very hard to get to the bottom of, I suspect. I agree with you in a sense. I mean, I think you're right, actually, Liam. I think the whole lag thing is very pertinent because I think three or four weeks ago, let's say, Lukaku, I mean, we were saying on the show, he clearly wants out. You know, that's what he wants to do. And that's probably what he relayed to his agent. His agent gives an interview saying much the same thing. And then, as you said, it gets published 2 weeks later, by which time Lukaku's suddenly getting game time, looking good, getting his confidence back, getting a bit of love, which he clearly needs. I think, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I actually think that for all his bravado and arrogance and ego, I think his ego is actually very, very fragile. I think he is absolutely a player who needs a lot of love, a big arm around him to get the best out of him. He doesn't respond well to people who don't do that, JK. Just like you, really. Like all supremely genius talents, mate.
Oh, my dear.
That's why I'm always putting my arm around you, really, isn't
you
it?
You do, metaphorically. Your arm's around me at the moment.
Put it out.
Oh, sweet. Thanks very much. No, you haven't got there. You didn't reach me.
I'll go this way. That's easier. There you go.
Did not Tommy T himself mention that strikers were sensitive in a press conference last week and they all needed to be nurtured? He said that, didn't he?
He did.
Quite possibly. I'm not across all of the press conferences as much as I used to because there's a bit of a rotation going on at The Athletic now.
But it was kind of a rhetorical question because he did, in fact.
He did because we talked about it because I was, like you, JK, was intrigued by that. And I totally agree. I'll be honest, unless he's completely lying and in denial, which, of course, lots of people are, the only striker that I know that has got one of the most unfracturable egos I've ever seen when it comes to being a striker is Kerry. And I've talked to him at length about this. What about goal droughts, mate? What about this? You know, he had such supreme belief in himself. I don't think he ever really... Either that or my memory's shorter than I thought it was and can't remember the goal droughts he had and him sulking, or he's in denial. But that's part of me that believes him, actually. I think
he missed a load of penalties, didn't he?
Yeah, but he was okay about it. I've talked to him about... I did an interview with him as a bit of research for an article I was writing, talking about that. And even then he said, well, you know, you get a chance the next game to take another one. And I was always up for it, you know, but they wouldn't let me. And I said, I'm not fucking surprised after that one at QPR. But anyway, we digress. Liam, the obvious big issue, really. I mean, we touched on it a minute ago for the cup final tomorrow and the press conference was Kovacic and whether he'll be fit. And as I think we'd all agree, he'd be a huge miss because I think he's been brilliant for us this season, the times when he has played. And he may well, who knows? But I think the question they were trying to tease out of Tuchel was, would you take a risk on it? And he actually said yes. Of course, the other issue is Kante and whether he's back fit, because, of course, he might be an option if Kovacic doesn't make it. So what do you think?
Well, I think ideally Tuchel would like to play both.
Well, yeah. Well, not Jorginho.
That's the combination he started against Liverpool in January at Stamford Bridge in that incredible 2-2 draw. And I think they were both excellent in that game. I forget exactly who started in the Carabao Cup final. I'd have to look it up again. But I think they are probably the best combination to face Liverpool, just because you have Kante, who's better than anyone else in the world at turning over talented opponents in areas they don't want to lose possession. And then he and Kovacic, and Kovacic in particular, is the best ball-carrying central midfielder in the world, I think. There's no one better to wriggle through the most intense press and get you moving forward in transition. And Kante can carry the ball in transition as well. That is kind of crucial to Chelsea's game plan, I think. They want to catch Liverpool on the hop, catch them as they're advancing up the pitch, and then try to slip one of those front three in behind their high line. And Kovacic and Kante are probably the best equipped to do that.
And they both started. They both started in both of those games. By the way, two all and the Caribou.
Yeah, so I think Tuchel would ideally love to do that again. But and of course he says now is the time to risk. But can you risk on both of them, or can you only risk realistically on one? Because you don't want the nightmare scenario of having to make two substitutions in the first half because both of your central midfielders have gone down. So it'll be a delicate one, I think, for Tuchel to try and calculate, and for Chelsea's medical staff, of course, who I'm sure will do everything they can to get them in position to play. We know they're both trained today. So we'll see. But it's really difficult. And we know, of course, as well, that Jorginho has had physical problems this season as well. And
a good game against Leeds, though, didn't he?
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I think that's been the main reason for his fluctuation in form, though, is that he's had physical problems throughout the season, and he's had back trouble for sections of the season. He's just played an incredible amount of football over the last 2-3 years without much in the way of a break.
Of course, Liam, all the J5 spunkers, for want of a better word, would be saying, well, you know, the reason he's got back trouble, he's been carrying the team for 2 years, you see. That's what they would say, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, him and Kante were the centre mid combination that won Chelsea the Champions League. So
very true.
Both of them have always got that and I do think they actually, you know, if you do decide Kovacic isn't fit to start, Jorginho, Kante, you know they've got that understanding. You know their qualities complement each other quite well. Jorginho maybe gives you that little bit of control with the ball. And they've got a ton of big game experience together. So I know neither of them have been at their absolute best for long stretches of this season. But if you can muster one last effort, yeah, the amount of big game experience they've got together, you'd be inclined to trust it, I think, if you were Tuchel.
Absolutely. I mean, talking of it's a big game and all of that, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but again, in the presser, it was revealed that Tuchel and his staff and the players have all bought tickets for tomorrow for the academy players and their families, which I thought was a very lovely thing to do. Of course, I think this is all to do with the sanctions and Chelsea not being able to spend the money, basically. But a lovely gesture, nevertheless. Very, very kind of... you know, it seems to me to be very evocative of what Tuchel often says, is that he wants to create a family kind of thing at Chelsea. And I thought that was a really good example of him doing that practically, if you like.
It's good leadership, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. I think, you know, Tuchel's probably, he's not the first coach to want to create that kind of environment, and he won't be the last. No. It's just, I think it's just the right thing to do. And in this crazy situation that Chelsea are in, where you can't pay for things you could previously pay for, or things that were previously taken as givens. It does help create that image of a joined up club, which is also something that he and the first team players were obviously very keen to highlight when they turned up to that Premier League 2 relegation decider at Cobham. You know, Tuchel's often at youth games.
Unlike a certain Jose Mourinho.
Well, and to be fair to Mourinho, he wasn't the only one who didn't take much of an interest.
Sarri,
you know, yeah,
Benitez. There were
probably more, more in the no interest column than in the interest column, if we're being honest, in the Abramovich era. But Tuchel's very much at the. I mean, he's from the German coaching school, so he was a youth coach first, so he's come through an environment where it's logical to look at the youth teams for potential internal solutions. And I know Chelsea are in a position with their squad where he hasn't actually elevated too many guys, but he has given academy players opportunities, maybe not as many as some would like. He might get more of an opportunity to do that and more of an obligation to do that under the new ownership.
Interesting stuff. Last thing really that piqued my interest was the idea, which I think we might revisit us three, as it were, later on, but the fact that the FA Cup final is not the season finale, which of course it was when I was growing up, which kind of added to its luster, really. And they quizzed him about that. I mean, of course, you know, the point being that we now have to, right after the Cup final, focus on two more games. And I think one of the lovely things about not just beating Leeds, but of course Arsenal combusting last night, is that we now only need one win to guarantee third place, but they've still got to pull that out. And it does seem a shame from a supporter's point of view. It was really interesting to hear what he had to say. I mean, he was ambivalent about it, as you would expect him to be, because there's a job to do and he knows that. But it sounded to me like he kind of agreed with our sensibilities there, that actually, you know, its importance warrants it being the season finale, and it's a shame that it isn't.
Yeah, and it feels unnatural, doesn't it, for it not to be, for it to be a couple of weeks from the end. I mean, we're all very used to the Carabao Cup being where it is, sort of two-thirds of the way through the season. But the FA Cup, Champions League, these big showpieces go hand-in-hand with the end of the season. And that's the case for most of the, I think, a lot of the domestic cup competitions in the other major European leagues. So I think that's what Tuchel was getting at. But it's an interesting one when you're talking about Chelsea and Liverpool, because functionally, this is kind of the end of Chelsea's season. I mean, they need one more point to guarantee Champions League football, but realistically, that Leeds game has probably got them there now. And they've got, you know, some games after this that they could, I don't think they'd have to play too well in order to get the points required. So this is basically it. And this is why, you know, you risk Kovacic, you risk Kante. But it's not for Liverpool. You know, they might have internally started thinking, yeah, we're not going to win the league now, but they've still got that Champions League final at the end of the season as well. So I think psychologically there's a difference between the two clubs that could work to Chelsea's advantage, because for them, this is the climax. This is the last chance to end
big
the season
game,
on
it?
A high.
Yeah.
It's the one last big effort really for them to summon. Whereas Liverpool know there's an even bigger battle on the horizon that A, they don't want to get injured for, but also they're going to need all of their energy for.
Yeah, it's a good point. I was thinking much the same. As always, we get good points from you, Liam, which is why we love having you on the show. And no, because I got Tony waiting, mate. Sorry. It's 7:30. But it's good to see you as always, Liam. No doubt we'll see you in a few weeks' time. Are you going tomorrow?
I am, yeah. Simon and I, with a two-pronged approach.
Okay. Well, we'll wave to you from the cheap seats tomorrow. How about that? All right. But like us, I'm sure you'll have a great day and enjoy it. And as I said, have a good weekend other than that. And we'll see you very soon.
Enjoy, guys. Speak soon.
Lovely. Excellent stuff. There you go. The lovely Liam Toomey from The Athletic there. And we will be back after a very short break. And we got Tony Evans football writer and proper old school scouser as well. Anyway, we'll see you in a sec.
Cheech.
JK, in all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Cheech, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. And where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back. Stanford Chidge here, Chelsea Fancast, Friday night preview show, of course. And now it is time for this.
The Opposition View.
That's right. I am very delighted to welcome back to the Chelsea Fancast Mr. Tony Evans, football writer and many other things besides. Tony, we're so honoured to have you back again. Thank you so much for coming along.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It was great last time. So, yeah.
Well, we enjoyed it on the show, but we got some great feedback from people too. They thought you were brilliant. So it's really lovely to get you back. Obviously, we want to talk about the cup final tomorrow. Massively special day in certain football supporters' calendar, as in those who are, you know, nearer to the end than the beginning, shall we say.
Yeah.
But before we do that, you know, you've had, you know, such a brilliant career as a journalist. I can't not ask you about what's been going on with Chelsea recently and get your perspective on that, but the takeover and everything that's gone on for the last 2 months, really.
I find it all very, very strange. I mean, I don't understand how the government can just take away basically the club and enforce a sale. I'm not sure where the money's going. I mean, because, you know, if the money's got to go to Abramovich because he owns the club, and otherwise it's, frankly, theft. You know, I can understand freezing assets. I can understand that sort of thing. But I don't get why they needed to basically force the sale of the club. You know, they could have frozen his assets and they could have released just enough of them so the club could continue, you know, for a reasonable period and not be underfunded. And then, you know, let Abramovich sell the club on his own. There's something wrong about the whole process. And all of a sudden then you had Ratcliffe coming in at the last minute with a seemingly amazing amount of money. You know, the man who, like, had, remember the Red Knights at Manchester United? And, you know, if he really wanted the club that badly, why did he take the £4.5 million on the Glazers? I just feel that Chelsea are being used by a lot of people politically, and it's not the best thing for Chelsea Football Club, and it's not the best thing for the fans. It's definitely not the best thing for the fans, and the whole thing reeks to me.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, I could have said that myself, you know, exactly that. And I think that's what a lot of them, I mean, I'm on the Supporters Trust board, and the Supporters Trust have been brilliant, actually. I mean, I haven't been involved at the sharp end so much, but they've been brilliant in trying to stand up for the fans and get the best deal for us that we can. But one thing that we've drawn a complete blank with, or hit a brick wall with, is getting the government to allow members to buy tickets for the last few home games, which is just, I just can't understand why they can do that, given that they're selling them FA Cup tickets or away tickets. It's madness.
Or Champions League tickets.
Yeah.
What are they gaining? What are the government gaining from being so obstructive in this? I just don't get it. I don't understand what the angle is that they're coming from here. Is it some kind of political motive? I don't get this. I don't see what they're achieving. What do you think?
They had to be seen to be doing something, didn't they? They applied these sanctions, had no idea of the unintended consequences of it, and as a result, there's been, you know, people on 0 hours or living wage contracts who've been put out of work because the megastore's closed. You can't sell programmes on the Fulham Road. All sorts of restrictions put in place. They only just allowed the women's team to operate when they realised, oh, most of their money's made on the gate. They've just not. They hadn't thought it through. And I think the MP around there's a Tory as well, and then he was quietly advised, oh, by the way, all the local businesses in the area are getting compromised by this as well. Then he suddenly started going, oh, maybe that's a little bit excessive. It's been quite unsettling watching my club just be used. We've said here, it's like a really shit beauty parade, or, you know, The Apprentice for even bigger wankers. It's just not been a pleasant process. And thankfully it seems to be coming to the end of it, but I still think that, and also, if you take one owner for associations, then you should be doing the same with all others. We see what's going on with Newcastle and that weird Saudi Arabia kit controversy that's just kicked off today. But there's not a word been said about it. So who knows?
Well, I mean, I was told a very similar thing, that, you know, it was a knee-jerk reaction. The government had to be seen to be doing something. And then they realised that the Chelsea supporters' catchment area contains a lot of seats that may well be marginal when it comes up. So they tried to rein back from it. But it seems to me there's been no clarity of thought. And I don't want to come over as an apologist for Abramovich, because, you know, he's been a very good owner for Chelsea, but and he hasn't got the closest links to Putin. I mean, nowhere near as close as Usmanov, whose obvious connections with Everton are important. But, you know, there were a whole host of different things they could have done with Abramovich that wouldn't have affected Chelsea Football Club. But you know what it's like? Football is, it's still, I always say this, still the biggest expression of working class culture in this country. And it's also, it blossoms with publicity when you use it for your own publicity. And it's become that cliche, I'm going to say it, a political football, which could have easily been avoided. But of course, this government is so clueless and so has so little idea of what they're going to do next. They just blunder from situation to situation. And I think it will hurt the club. And one last thing on it, you know, I'd say, you know, you're going to get Todd Bowley and his consortium as new owners. If the experience of Liverpool anything to go by, they're not, the Americans won't be bad owners. Then again, the experience of the Glazers says they're terrible owners. But if they do it like Fenway, they'll be good owners. But, you know, there won't be the spending, obviously, of the Abramovich era. The club will be set up to make money, you know, and so it'll be a slight change of culture. But I would have thought that, in the sense that Chelsea is a club that can deal with that, has the fan base, has the credentials. So I don't fear too much for Chelsea's future like I did, 2 months ago.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree with that, Tony. In fact, we've said it a lot. You know, if they're more like the FSG than the Glazers or Kroenke, then we'll be okay. But I mean, the other side of that coin is that, you know, we've spent a lot of money, but we've wasted a hell of a lot of money on sacking managers when we perhaps shouldn't have done, and buying duds when we wish we hadn't. So, if you know, the Bowley's consortium iron that out, then we may end up with a much better run club. And the one thing that gives me hope is the fact that Bowley's, you know, come out publicly and said that, you know, the best way to make money actually out of football is to ensure that that team wins on the pitch. Win on the pitch, you'll win commercially. And that's if you're a supporter, you kind of want to hear that, I suppose.
And what Liverpool didn't have when Fenway came in was a top class manager. You know, they had Roy Hodgson, and then they brought Dalglish back, and Dalglish and Fenway never saw eye to eye. Then they went for Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. Once they got a top class manager, Jurgen Klopp, then all the stuff, you know, but before that they were fiddling about too much with the idea, you know, with the statistics and the analytics. And they didn't have a football line. They didn't have anyone who had clear thoughts about football. What the positive for Chelsea is you've got Tuchel, who is an exceptional manager, knows what he's doing, knows what he wants, knows what type of players he needs to set his team up. So I was.
He hasn't got actually yet, Tony, has he? Really, when you think about it, he's been playing with Lampard's team. He's been playing with other teams. So this is other players from other teams. So it'd be interesting to see what scope they give him for getting his players in the transfer market to make it into his side, in the way that Klopp made Liverpool into his side as well, which you need players. You know.
I think the Americans are more likely to do that than under the previous regime, you know, where, as we all know, managers sometimes were presented with players that they didn't particularly like. And, you know, Marina would turn up with what can I do with him? So I think the Americans are more likely to target what Tuchel wants. And I think from that point of view, I think that's a real positive.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Let's talk to you about what I really dragged you out on a Friday evening, away from the pub or whatever, to talk about your beloved Liverpool. I'm not known for doing much research at all, actually, so tonight is a bit of a treat. But I actually kind of went back, because it struck me, actually, how weirdly similar Chelsea and Liverpool's FA Cup pedigree is, actually. And I've known this fact for a long time, that Liverpool were in their first FA Cup final the year before we were, and sadly we both lost, although we did get more stuffed by Sheffield United than you did by Burnley. But, you know, 1913-14 and 1914-15, for those who are interested. But since then, you know, it took you a long time to go and win one. Your first one was 65, our first one was 70. But there have been kind of periods of dominance in the FA Cup for both Liverpool and Chelsea, you know, us more recently, but we won a few before Roman came as well. I was just really fascinated by that, and I hadn't really thought about that. So, I mean, the question really is, you know, where do you as a Liverpool supporter stand on the FA Cup and the club's association with it, really?
Well, funnily enough, I was just writing about it. I was writing about the 65 semi, which obviously, and for a number of reasons. One, as you said, Liverpool and Chelsea's FA Cup pedigree is very similar. Neither has won the FA Cup at that time. And it was the biggest thing in the game, more important than winning the league. You know, it's and it comes to that semi, and, you know, sort of Liverpool, Beatlemania, it swept the world. You know, it's like, so Liverpool had sort of were caught up in the coattails of that. Swing in London was massive. You know, Chelsea were one of the symbols of that, the King's Road. You know, you had Rachel Welsh, we had Cilla Black.
I think we got the bad deal, maybe.
Oh, man. But, you know, so writing about that, yeah. And there has been, you know, the crossover there, the similarities are massive. And for me, well, I think for any Liverpool fan who's probably over 40, we grew up with, like, the 65. Why it was so important, both the semi and the final, it was the first time they won the cup. It was the one thing Everton had over us in the city. I mean, they were obviously the first team in the city at the time, but it was like, you know, the live birds will fly away if Liverpool ever win the cup. There was and the rejoicing was unbelievable. But that was the moment that they stepped out of Everton's shadow and became an equal in the city and then pushed on. So 65 was really, really crucial. And, you know, it's and you're talking about iconic cup finals. Well, 1970, do they get more iconic than that? You know, it's let's face it, and I'm not talking about Chelsea fans here. Anyone of my age who hasn't watched that cup final a dozen times, both games, well, frankly, they're not a football fan. You know, it's one of the great mass brawls in the history of the game. You know, it's
and let's face it, nobody likes Leeds, Tony.
Nobody likes Leeds. You know, the only thing that will disappoint me this year if they go down is that Everton will stay up. No. Joe, honestly.
I had to show someone someone asked me about the Chelsea-Leeds rivalry just after the game on Wednesday. So I'd mentioned that I think David Ellery had re-refereed the 70 final and sent off someone twice. And then I just grabbed the YouTube clip of was it Eddie McCready, Kung Fu.
Kicking Bremner.
Yeah, kicking him right in the head. Like, oh, and they just got on with it.
And there was no foul and nothing happened.
Play on.
Just play on. The ref's so far away, you probably didn't even see it. That's the trouble.
It was a different world then. Martin, sorry, go on, mate. No.
Now, that ref retired after that game, didn't he?
I'm not surprised.
So,
we've both got very similar histories in the FA Cup, which intrigued me. I mean, we've won 8, you've won 7. We both lost 7. So, annoyingly, we're all behind United and Arsenal and Spurs, I think. If we win tomorrow, we'll go clear of Spurs, which will really please me, as you can imagine. But we've got a massively brilliant history between us, I think. You talk about the 70 Cup final being iconic. I mean, Jonathan's generation, absolutely. It was pivotal for his generation. But for a younger generation, Martin, and I'm somewhere in the middle. I'll tell you what my pivotal moments were, but Martin would probably quote 97 and when we came back from 2-0 down as one of his favourite matches of all time. Whereas mine is 78 and 82, you know, when we were absolutely rubbish. We were in the second division and we beat the then European champions, not once, but twice. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
And amid an atmosphere of absolute anarchy. You know, there was murder on both those games. You know, it was I remember the all the papers ran the picture of them all fighting over the fences. You know, it was like in terms of encapsulating probably the best and the worst of the 70s and 80s experiences. Yeah. Those two games, they do it for me. You know, it's like, you know, it was that walk back to Fulham Broadway. Felt a lot longer that day. Yeah. It was wild, but the games were wild as well. I was lucky in a number of ways for the 97 game, is I was doing the Super Bowl in New Orleans that day, and I got into the stadium, the Superdome, and as I walked in, one of the other journalists was there, and he said to me, you're 2-0 up at Chelsea. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's all right. You know, went and got myself something to eat and had a drink, come back to you. You know, once we're going to get in the next round, you're knocked out, mate. So at least I wasn't there to see it. You know, I could avoid it, so I've never watched it since. But yeah, I mean, great games, absolutely fantastic games. And even 10 years ago, the cup final, the Dalglish team, that wasn't the best game in the first half because Chelsea was so on top. But it was a really rousing finish, you know. And, one of those games that... you come away with and you say, oh, yeah, it wasn't a bad game.
The Petr Cech save at the end is absolutely magnificent. It came up as a clip last week, and every time you just look at it, Carroll ran away thinking he'd scored it, and then looked up.
Wonder if they had goal line technology, you know, it's because it was. I mean, I think he saved it. I mean, I think like in 2005, it never went over the line, so it's.
1-1 then.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, actually, it's interesting you talk about the 2012 final, because for Chelsea supporters, well, I may speak for myself here, but I'm presuming that many will think the same. It's kind of forgotten about that one because it's completely overshadowed by what happened a week or so later when we won the Champions League European Cup. Let's have it right. When we won that for the first time. So it tends to get a bit forgotten about. And I'm wondering if there could be an interesting similarity here for you guys, because you've got the European Cup Champions League final after this cup final. Do you think the team and the supporters' eyes are going to be more on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very hard to keep the team focused. And, I mean, we've seen it both ways. You know, Chelsea went in the cup final and then went on to win the Champions League. And, you know, it was the way that season had gone. You could see the confidence building with Chelsea as every week went by. I mean, that was a great group of players. They didn't need a manager. They just needed to be rid of a manager who was getting it all wrong. And they coalesced as they went on. I've seen the other way, you know, Liverpool in 77 with the European Cup final on the Wednesday. and, you know, it's just United beat us. And there was sort of, I wouldn't say they had the eye on the bigger game, but they weren't fully switched on. So I think, you know, I think the things in Chelsea's favour really that there's still this, we still talk about the quadruple, although, you know, it's hard to see City dropping any points. It's been hard to see them dropping any points for a while now. But, like, you know, the one thing, I mean, yeah, Chelsea needs a point, really, to secure top four status for next year, because your goal difference is so high that, you know, Arsenal and Tottenham are, you know, and also, can you see them being mentally tough enough to win the last two games? So kind of think, you know, Tuchel can afford to throw almost everything at this game tomorrow, whereas Klopp can't. And I think that'll make a slight difference in mentality. And you know, as well, I mean, yeah, after the League Cup final in February, you know, he'll be looking at that and thinking about that and, you know, and brooding on that result. Because frankly, you know what? It's like, you look at the that disallowed goal and the third disallowed goal and Lukaku. And it's just a terrible decision. Why VAR is wrong. None of the defenders thought he was offside. He didn't think he was offside. He didn't gain advantage. It was a brilliant goal. And, you know, in a sane world, Chelsea would have won it. So I think Tuchel will take a lot of confidence from that and will set up accordingly. Whereas, you know, Liverpool, Fabinho's out and obviously he's in the best team.
Is that a big miss for you guys?
Yeah. He's, you know, because he'd be getting it into that, you know, the base of the Chelsea midfield with, you know, getting into, you know, Jorginho and Kante, you know, or, you know, he does an awful lot to put Liverpool's stamp on that midfield area. And so with him not being there, there's a different dynamic. And so I think that plays into Chelsea's hands as well. Yeah. But I think largely, though, the game will be won out wide. You know, I think, you know, you've got, you know, we're going to see Reece James and Trent on the other side. And, you know, both fantastic players and both, you know, have a mass, you know, propel the team forward massively. And, you know, obviously, you know, Andy Robertson as well. And I think that's where, for me, where the game will be won and lost out wide.
Yeah.
Is Robertson back for that game? I know he played Tsimikas at the weekend. He's back.
Yeah. Robertson will be back. He was rested. So you know, they'll be almost at full strength, but without Fabinho.
Yeah. It's
a big drop-off.
I mean, Tony, you could argue that Chelsea have been leggy since about January, really. But, you know, people have been saying, I've been hearing a lot on the radio and in the press recently, I mean, you've won, obviously, four out of your last five. You drew against Tottenham, but they've not been the kind of dominant performances that we've associated with this particular Liverpool side. When they get ahead, they just absolutely steamroll the sides and they're buzzing around all over the place. People have been saying they've been looking a bit leggy, possibly. Do you buy that?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's obviously going to get difficult, and there's a great consciousness that of the games ahead as well. Klopp's rotated, you know, it's, I mean, for example, people, you know, you look at Newcastle, where, you know, it was far from his first 11, but they did really well. And they played in a way that essentially they just, you know, to use a boxing analogy, they just, you know, kept Newcastle at arm's length and give them a dig every now and again. You know, it looked like they were trying to conserve energy. Mm. One of the interesting comparisons with 2012 is one of the Liverpool players at the time, once sort of the Champions League, you know, sort of disappeared from the horizon, the top four, and there's won the League Cup. They kind of only thought about the FA Cup. They switched off a little bit and didn't really switch on properly again, you know, arguably until the last 20 minutes of the final. And I don't think Chelsea will have switched off in this period, you know, sort of the last few weeks. I mean, well, you look at Leeds, I know they're not the best side, but they dispatched them with ease. But so I don't think Chelsea have switched off. I think they'll be readier for this game tomorrow than us.
Mm, interesting. I mean, I think our performance, actually, I'm not sure if I agree entirely. I mean, I think when we got knocked out of the Champions League by Real Madrid when, you know, we shot ourselves in the foot in the first match and made it impossible, played brilliantly in the second leg, and were quite unlucky to go out in the end. And that you could see that the air went out of the tyres for a couple of weeks. And I think that probably explains a lot of the shoddy performances recently. But, you know, I think we needed that result against Leeds. And I'm you know, speak for all of us. I think we're delighted to have seen it. Because going into the cup final tomorrow against Liverpool, who are a superb side, on the back of some of those performances recently, would have made me even more nervous than I am already. So we shall see.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of them. They might have been at the best, you know, in recent weeks, you know, either team. But you know what? They're going to be there. They're going to be in that final at Wembley. They're going to have that atmosphere. They're going to look across at each other. And, you know, we know Manchester City are the biggest bogeymen in the game. And, you know, we know they've been set up to dominate for a decade. And, you know, if it wouldn't have been for Liverpool, this would be the fifth title in a row. We know they've got unlimited money. And, you know, even Abramovich couldn't compete with Abu Dhabi's wealth. And, you know, we're moving into a different era with Chelsea now. So, as I say, the idea will be stopping City, and City is in everyone's minds. But, you know, once they look at each other tomorrow in that tunnel, they won't be thinking about anything except each other. And they'll think, got to beat these. And let's face it, two of the biggest clubs in the world, two of the dominant forces with a history between them that, you know, can't help but get you excited. And, you know, they're going to go for it. And, you know, if I think everyone will be totally switched on. Everyone will be given 100%. And I think it's going to be a cracker. Let's face it. Yeah. The League Cup final was a 0-0 draw. And that was a stormer. Yeah. You can watch 0-0 draws like that all day and night.
Yeah.
And I suspect we'll see more goals tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, Tuchel seemed to say as much in the presser today. I think you're absolutely right. They're gonna absolutely go for it tomorrow, I think. And I don't think Liverpool know any other way, frankly. And I think that will make us have to respond. And I can't see you never know. He might try and park the bus, but I just think they'd be foolish to do it. You know, we've got the players to hurt you, so just let them have a go.
I wondered whether he'd go for a flat back four and try and dominate the midfield early, and then then start getting down the lines. But, you know, I was just looking at different ways where, you know, you are the coach, you know, how you could approach the game. Yeah. But, you know, I think the likelihood he's going to go for a three, isn't it? A central three, and, you know, and just do what they do best.
Yeah, exactly that. So we're all rather excited and looking forward to it, Tony. How do you see it going? Give us a prediction.
I think it'll be tight. I think it'll be the odd goal that wins it. But wouldn't surprise me if it's a 2-1, 3-2. You know, I think there will be goals. I don't think, but both sides have got strengths in the defence. But both sides, certainly with the wing-backs, play a risk-reward game. And the rewards are massive, but there are risks.
Yeah.
And there is space. You know, there's always space behind Trent. There's always space behind Reece. So, you know, both teams will be trying to work into those areas and get behind them. So I think we're going to see goals.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'll settle for that. You're not going to stick your neck out and put a score on it, though. You did actually. You kind of said 2-1 or 3-2, didn't you, I think? So, yeah.
I'll go 3-2. I'll go 3-2.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Because that to Liverpool.
Yeah, I would think so, JK.
I think it could go either way. But you know what? I'm not going to say you're going to win, am I?
Of course he's not.
You're bearing an effigy to me at all.
Well, exactly.
Do anyway.
True. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was another draw. I mean, effectively, all three games this season have been a draw, which tells you how tight it's been between them. And you can, you know, it's a cigarette paper between the two sides, I think.
The margins are so small. It's untrue.
It's going to be a cracker. Are you going to go? Are you going tomorrow?
Yes.
Good man. Well, if I bump into you, I'll say hello. And by the way, I now owe you at least 2 pints in the cask. So, you know, I will honour that debt at some time when I'm in Pimlico. It'd be lovely to talk more football with you over a beer, that's for sure. But
one of the great joys in life is a good beer and talking footy. So, you know,
too right. I'd certainly drink to that. But Tony, thank you again for coming on and joining us on the Chelsea Fancast. It's really superb of you to do so. I can't wish you luck for tomorrow. But what I will say is that if you let us have the FA Cup tomorrow, I'd be delighted to see you beat City in the Champions League final in a week or two's time.
Madrid.
I meant Real Madrid, didn't I? I'm having a brain fart. Well, that'll be interesting, won't it? Because
did you turn that semi final off after 89 minutes or something?
No, I very nearly did. I know. I was just having a brain fart. I was kind of fixating on what Tony was saying earlier about City and why we don't like them. And I was thinking at the time, well, how many European Cups have they got?
You know, you're completely evil empires.
I am, aren't I? Really, but there you go. Now, I wish you luck in that because Real Madrid have got far too many. We can't let that happen.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, you know, and let's face it, the only time we back the Francoists is when they're playing City.
Well, that's a good point. Tony, whatever happens tomorrow, enjoy yourself. I know you will.
Yeah, and have a great
day. We will too, yeah. And hopefully we'll get you back some other time. It's always a pleasure seeing you. So thanks for that and have a good weekend.
Have a great one.
Cheers, mate. Soon. Lovely to see you. Brilliant. There you go. Fantastic Tony Evans there. Estimable, I think I called him earlier, didn't I? Estimable football writer. Very well-known football writer and an excellent one too. So there we go. We're going to have a short break. Then we're going to come back for our preview of the FA Cup final tomorrow.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy. And you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast with me, Stanford Chidge, and it's the Friday night preview show. A very big, special Friday night preview show tonight because it is the FA Cup final tomorrow. I mean, lordy, lordy, this is what we all live for. Really, I know a lot of you don't understand how special this is.
Up for the cup. People used to say that. Up for the cup.
We'll explain to you precisely why it's so special in a minute or two. But you know where we have to start, JK? We have to start with ye old team selection. And this is what your Uncle Chidge has gone for. You won't be surprised to hear this. Mendy in goal.
I love these moments.
I know you do. I know. Because you're always the first to say to me, if I ever get it right, Chidge, you got it right. You got it right on Friday, you say. And I love that. Anyway, I invariably don't, though. That's the truth. But I've gone for Mendy in goal, Rudiger, Silva, Aspilicueta. I just cannot, even though I thought Chaloba was excellent, and actually half of me would much prefer to see him play there, I just think Tuchel's not going to drop his skipper and all that experience. So I think Aspie will start. I'm presuming that Kovacic will not be fit enough to play and that Kante will be. So that gives us Kante and Jorginho. And having heard from Liam earlier on and checking it out myself that both, you know, that Kante and Kovacic started both of the games we've played for them recently, the 2-2 and the Caribou. I'm a bit disheartened by that. But who knows? Maybe Kovacic will be fit and he'll pick Kovacic and Kante. I kind of hope so at the moment. Alonso on the left because we ain't got no other options, but I like Alonso, so I'm not worried about that. James absolutely starts, nailed on the right. And then I'm staying with the three that we had against Leeds. So I've got Mount, Pulisic on the left, and Lukaku up front. I think Lukaku's found his mojo, hopefully, and it's a big game. He's supposed to be a big game player. Let's give him a go. Pulisic, I thought, was excellent against Leeds. And I also like the idea of Pulisic on the left, so he can either, you know, two-foot Terence Trent derby, or at least keep up with him when Alonso won't be. So I that's another reason why I started him. The other thing, of course, is that Tuchel might throw a spanner in the works and say, oh, they play with a really high line. I'll play Werner because he can, like, counter-attack. But I'm not sure if that's the right idea. I would stick with the three that played really well against Leeds. There endeth the team selection from Chidge. What do you think?
I think you'll play Christensen on the right instead of Aspie, and then we'll have the bizarre situation of having two players who won't be playing for the club next year, playing in the cup final. And if Alonso, according to the rumours, goes to Barcelona, that'll be three of them. And if Dave comes on, there'll be four players on their way, if according to the press. I think he'll try and play. It was excellent. Christensen was excellent against Leeds. Really terrific. And poor old Rudiger, everybody shouted out Rudy, and he gave a kind of pathetic clap to the crowd when there was the illness in the crowd, and there was the pause. Rudiger came over to the side to speak to one of the the Chelsea hierarchy and then walked across, and he got his name got called out. Then he looked across very sheepishly and gave a little clap. But you felt that he was, I think he was feeling slightly embarrassed about the whole thing. And at the end, he was called in. He was the very first off the pitch, intriguingly. But I reckon he'll play Rudiger and Christensen, and then neither will play next week. Actually, I think that might be the shape of things for the rest of the season. Silva will play, and I think he'll play Conte and Kovacic from the beginning. Bring Jorginho on later.
That's exactly what happened in the League Cup final. I think that was with penalties in mind.
Yeah. But anyway, just bring him on. Not even necessarily penalty. I think one of them will not last the 90 minutes. I think, but he'll start with them. And Chidge, I'd like to agree with you over Pulisic, Lukaku, and Mount, because they were a very formidable combination. As I said, Mount was fabulous against Leeds. When Mount plays at that level, non-stop, great skill. Those lovely triangles he plays with James, and the joy after he'd scored and Reece James had provided the cross for him was fantastic. I love it.
He loved giving it to the Leeds fans as well. I think it extends from the Derby games, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely, absolutely. I don't know, Havertz might feel hard done by, but perhaps knowing that there'll be a substitution and Havertz comes on very fresh and it gives him a very different angle might be the way forward. I thought Ziyech came on and played decently. They all played very well against Leeds. I know Leeds were dreadful and just lost it and gave up. There was one dreadful moment in the second half at Leeds where we got the ball and I think it was Christensen just stopped the ball but near the halfway line and nobody challenged him. Nobody came anywhere near
him. There were a few of those moments. I mean, there was one where Jorginho basically led the press and crunched one of them high up the pitch. You're just thinking Leeds have given up here. They've just gone. So,
but speaking of the press there, Martin, I think that was what was so important, was that they looked back to their best pressing. There was never a moment when Leeds weren't harried. I think
there wasn't a counter press from Leeds. There was nothing from Leeds.
Nothing.
I think Liverpool will be a lot of times better. But
nonetheless, this is the way the team is supposed to play, you know. And I was just very immensely impressed by the level of energy and commitment, which they'll have again tomorrow.
JK, you know, irrespective of the opposition, they were right at it from the first minute.
They were absolutely brilliant.
You know, I must share this with you because it might make you giggle. I mean, I had a client yesterday that finished about 25 past seven. So, you know, then had to drive home, just a 5 or 10 minute drive. So I was desperately trying to find it on the radio, not on TalkSport, not on TalkSport 2, not on Radio 5, not on Radio 5 Live. Bollocks. Okay, right, I'll try the Fifth Stand app. So I started listening to the commentary on the Fifth Stand app, and, you know, I could tell that the match hadn't started because I heard the whistle go. And the reason I could hear the whistle go was that clearly somebody hadn't plugged in Cundy and I think it's Lee Parker's mic. So the entire drive home, well, most of the drive home, I just heard the crowd noise, the atmosphere. But I knew Chelsea had scored because I actually heard the ball hit the back of the net. The effects mic had picked it up and I heard the cheer and I thought, that's a Chelsea cheer. That's not a Leeds cheer. So I kind of knew that we were 1-0 up before I got home, even though I hadn't heard a word of commentary. And then suddenly out of nowhere, Cundy and Parker appear like nothing had happened. I'm thinking, is this budget cuts or something? I don't know.
Sanctions. They can't plug mics in.
There you go. Leaf has verified this. He says Fifth Dan commentary was away for the first 5 minutes. So there you go. I think it's about time that we educate the younger Chelsea Fancast listeners, of whom there are many, I'm told, as to why it is, you know, we, all three of us, all slightly different ages, but all three of us, and Chelsea supporters as a whole, and the club, why this club loves the FA Cup so much, JK.
Yes, we're normally not good enough to win the league, so we're terribly good at cup competitions. It's as basic as that. But it's joyous going away and beating teams who are supposedly better than you and you putting in a terrific performance. We always seem to rise to the occasion as well. As you were mentioning, the two Liverpool performances when we were in the second division and the 4-2, which is one of the great cup results, great cup games. But yeah, we seem to have a capability to immerse ourselves in the the necessity of playing brilliantly over in a tie that's normally just a one leg away or home. So it's a cup game, and we're up for that, and we do that. If we can create a side that can carry on winning Premier League matches as well, and you know, the marathon of the season, then we'll be the complete team. But at the moment, we what with all the difficulties we've had all year over playing in the many competitions and COVID and everything, I think we've done remarkably well to get to the final again. But we seem to be, I suppose, just luck of the draw. Otherwise, we would have played Liverpool or who did Liverpool play in the semi-final?
City.
Man City.
Yeah, City, of course, we'd have played them, and we were lucky then to play Palace. But you need a bit of luck in the draw. But yeah, it's when you're not winning the league and you can maintain a terrific standard, you become a cup side. And we've always managed to do that. And on occasions, when we've won the double, we've done both. So I think it's just because we're a very decent side. I don't think there's a particular mentality to it. I just think it's because, you know, we're going to try and win as many competitions as available. And if it happens that we can't maintain the same standard to win the league, we're up for playing the cup competitions. Mm-hmm. And luckily, Tuchel is as tuned in as any manager has been about that.
Yeah, I mean, Martin, you know, you're kind of the generation under me. I'm kind of the generation under JK. You're the generation under me. So I missed 1970, for example. But for me, 94 and 97 were very, very uppermost. I mean, you just about get in for 94, 97, don't you?
I managed to miss the Di Matteo goal in 97 because I'd gone out and made a cup of tea and I come back and he's wheeling away celebrating. So, I mean, my first FA Cup final memories are from 93 and I think it went to a replay and then Chelsea losing to Man U in the pissing rain was the following year. But, you know, the first FA Cup was in 1872. So this year is the 150th anniversary. Next year is the 100th anniversary of the first ever FA Cup final at Wembley, the White Horse final. It's just history and tradition. I mean, it winds me up when it gets taken for granted or, you know, people advocate fucking around with it because they prioritise league or they only show statistics relating to the Premier League and they don't include FA Cup. My main bug, so this goes back to when Fernando Torres was at Chelsea and they wanted to illustrate how he was struggling, how he was bad and all this stuff. So they said he'd scored like this many goals in this many games and the numbers looked bad. The numbers only showed the league games. They missed out the FA Cup, which he had scored goals in. They missed out the games in Europe, which he had scored goals in. So this whole thing of disregarding the FA Cup and then bemoaning that certain, you know, younger generations maybe don't pay an interest in it, it's because they've been conditioned not to by in certain quarters. So basically for me, and it's not like it used to be with the cup final television, the grandstand starting at 6 o'clock in the morning and all this bollocks, but you know, it's a day. And it was, when I grew up, it was like, I caught the tail end of when it was like the whole day on the terrestrial TV channel was dedicated to the cup final. I caught the end of that. So like when Grandstand was only showing one event and it was the FA Cup final. So I kind of picked up through there. And then it got shunted around on television a little bit. And I can see why younger fans say, the age I was when I first saw a cup final, think of it as a lesser competition, but it really isn't. And if you win it, it's fucking brilliant.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think just to underline that point, we were talking before we went on air, weren't we, that, you know, as a kid, I could tell you every single FA Cup final for about 15, 20 years, you know.
Well, JK remembers the old Etonians, well, dominating, know. Well, did they not?
He was there.
I was there. I had my rattle.
But, you know, I could recite every cup final. For me, it was from 70, because I was five in 1970.
I suppose the thing is, if you can remember FA Cup finals and matches and incidents that you didn't, where you didn't support either team.
Well, that's the point.
So, like the Jim Montgomery side and things like that, and
the five-minute final, you know, United Arsenal. I remember Tony talking about the United Liverpool one in 77. I mean, I just have such clear memories of that. And the reason is that when I was a kid, it was probably the, apart from England internationals, it was about the only game that was ever televised live football, live football match. And quite frankly, it is really still, and people forget this point. It's the biggest match in England, biggest football match in England in the calendar year. You know, the history of it. If you go back to what we were saying about the fact that it was the only one on TV, you know, both ITV and BBC would dedicate an entire day's coverage just to the FA Cup final, the most ridiculous, like, you know, Cup final, it's a knockout, you know, Cup final, blankety blank, you name it, awful game shows that they would transpose into FA Cup final themed ones. So, it, you know, when you're a kid, it gets into you and it becomes huge. And then, of course, you know, we've got such a... I don't know. I think maybe... You see, this is the thing, isn't it, boys? I wonder what you think of this. I think what happened to this club in 1970 was so epochal. You know, it was so defining for this club. Even now. I mean, you know, you look at the season ticket holders. We've got the oldest demographic of season ticket holders in the country. The average age is above my age. It's my age, about, you know, let's say between late 50s and early 60s. There's a reason for that. Most of them became supporters in 1970 because we won the FA Cup. And people would choose the team they supported based on who won the FA Cup. And, you know, that's what happened with us. So I think it's defined this club, JK, in many respects, hasn't it?
Well, I almost became a Wolves supporter, Chidge, because Wolves won the FA Cup in 1960.
There you go.
They beat Blackburn 3-0, and I liked the old gold shirts. And then my dad had to persuade me that going to the Midlands probably wasn't a very good idea to support them. And then they didn't do terribly well the next year. But no, by that, I've been to see Chelsea, so the die was cast. But yeah, definitely, you're always affected by, as a child, by the team that's doing well. That's why there's an abundance of Man United and Liverpool supporters in London, because they were the teams that were doing well, you know, 25 years ago. But yeah, you would hope that there are many Chelsea fans who've been affected by seeing the team win, or even in some instances has been pointed out on the fancast, wanting to the underdog. Everybody supports Man United and Liverpool. Let's support someone else, and I like the blue shirts. But yeah, it depends on the media, who the media are pushing as well, and the type of football. And happily, the club is such an elite club now that. All we need to do is, as you were saying earlier, is we need to on the pitch. If the success is on the pitch, we'll maintain the hundreds and hundreds of new supporters we get every year. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think I think because it's ingrained in the clubs, you know, people have this horrible phrase, don't they? Oh, the club's DNA. But I think the FA Cup genuinely is burned into the club's DNA, and I think that explains why Chelsea have made such a maybe even an unconscious effort to win it, and why they've been so successful at it. I mean, we talk every year, don't we, about we very seldom play really, really weakened teams until the last couple of years, maybe. We'd put a strong team out for an FA Cup match. We take the competition seriously. One thing I didn't get to ask Tony, which I wanted to, was to ask him why Klopp hasn't taken it seriously over the years. This is the first time Klopp's taken Liverpool to the Cup final. First one they've been in since 2012, Martin.
Yeah, well, I think it was probably still building the team at the time, and with Liverpool the focus was always on the league. So I mean, the League Cup they won back in February was his first domestic cup, so he'd be looking to win it tomorrow just purely to, you know, complete the set. Yeah.
I thought there was South Anfield, wasn't it, didn't they say?
Anfield South.
Anfield of the South.
That's something else you should have asked Tony, because there were some of his colleagues in the media who were coming out with that bullshit. And
what a load of bollocks.
Well, you know, there's a lot of Liverpool fans in the media. Pep was spot on. And yeah, the reaction to it has proved him exactly right, because they're so rattled. They're like, no. He's like, yes, you fucking are.
But I think the 1970 win was actually significant, because Chelsea hadn't been winning anything and had lost the 1967 Cup final. And there was a great deal of affection for a team, that the way that Chelsea played football at the time. And I think as you're absolutely right, Chidge, it was a very kind of seminal moment for the club, just because it was winning a trophy, but winning a trophy also over two legs against dirty Leeds. It was, I think, large numbers of the country were in really on Chelsea's side, because Leeds was such a physical detested team despite their success of that period. It was, you know, some people wanted Chelsea to win. So you have many, many people supporting Chelsea just for those two cup finals. So the fact it was over two finals and the fact that Leeds seemed to play very well against Chelsea, who just defended and then got these two goals, particularly the second one off a long throw, just seemed to cement it really. And so I think there was some, and also the way they played under Sexton, they played a very fluid, interesting style of football. So, I mean, all right, they may have been soft and southern, but and, you know, all that was related to the King's Road, slightly showbiz and celebrities. But I think there was affection for them. And I think it was a very significant moment for the club to actually win a trophy in 1970 and then follow it up by winning the European Cup Winners' Cup.
Indeed, mate. And, you know, as I said recently, there has been no club better in the FA Cup than Chelsea, even though we've managed to. I mean, we've been in five of the last six finals, including this one. We may have conspired to lose the last two in a row, which is just horrible. We need to sort that out. I mean, that's a good point, actually, Martin, isn't it? We can't lose three in a row. I mean, I know we can always say if we do, well, there you go. You know, Chelsea are making history again. But that's not the kind, yeah. It's not the kind of history I want. I'm serious, guys. I am as nervous as a fucking kitten about tomorrow because I cannot bear. I mean, one of the worst experiences I've had at a football match was when we didn't turn up against Arsenal under Conte. And I mean, I left with Psycho Phil, Pablo and Stu, and it's the most miserable and angry I've been leaving a football match other than, say, the Barcelona semi. I was just, you know, in deep depression about it because I love winning the FA Cup. I cannot contemplate losing tomorrow. It'll be awful to lose three in a row. Can't bear the idea of it.
No, it's not palatable. But I think the one thing that may work in our favour is that the finals we've lost, the Leicester and Arsenal, we were expected to win, and maybe some of the players expected to win, and then it didn't happen here. We're very much the underdog, and much like in Porto last year, you know, we may not be the favourites, but don't rule us out completely.
It's a good point, actually. We tend to do better, don't we, JK, as underdogs, particularly in the cup, like you were saying earlier.
Oh, completely, yeah, because nobody expects us to beat City last year, and yet. Yeah, I think it could be in our favour, that. I think it's pretty important that Kovacic plays, pretty important that Conte plays, but because otherwise it'll be Cheek and Jorginho, which I don't think is an ideal combination for the midfield. But, let's see what's... I mean, I can only sit back and, you know, let the events wash over me, see what happens. But, yeah, I don't think it's any... it's a foregone conclusion that Liverpool win at all, as some people, you know. In fact, if any scouser who comes up and says in the 5-0, I'll think, oh, hang on, this is exactly the same as Porto last year. So,
yeah, I mean, there is always that, and we'll get a bit of that tomorrow. I mean, the good, I think, you know, Tony raised some good points, Liam raised some good points earlier. You know, how do we beat Liverpool? They are a phenomenally good team, but they've not bettered us at all this season. I mean, I know. I mean, I'm going to plead the Mourinho on the Caribou. You know, we did not lose that match. You know, we lost it on some shonky penalties, but you know,
a shonky penalty.
But we've matched them. You know, pound for pound in every match we played this season. And I wonder if Klopp's got a, you know, a bit of a kind of an issue playing Chelsea, not just Chelsea, but Chelsea with Tuchel in it. I mean, you know, you often get this saying, don't you, that, oh, for fuck's sake, you've given this team too much respect. And I wonder if maybe he does that. You know, to go 2-0 up at the Bridge and then for us to come back 2-2 tells me a little bit about like that. You know, he was out-fought and outgunned, really, I think. I mean, maybe that's a bit over-optimistic in the Caribou because they had plenty of chances too. But I wonder if there's a little bit about that. And then there's, you know, Liam, with what he was saying earlier on, the fact that, you know, that this is the biggest game for us, our last big game of the season. Liverpool, as Tony was saying, got the Champions League after it. Fabinho's out. There's a lot of things that, and we're the underdogs. I mean, there's a lot of things that may make me feel a little bit more comfortable, JK.
Well, everything you've said is correct, but... if we play, don't exhibit the same amount of energy we played against Leeds, or they get an early, I don't even think it matters if they get an early goal. I think we can, as long as we play to the plan, play with energy, are committed, do the brilliant pressing that we do. All right, it's a different form of pressing, as you said, Martin. But I don't think it's going to be a... I've been already told by various frat mates who support Liverpool that they're going to roll us over. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. It's going to be unbelievably close. Small margins, as we keep talking about. And I think we may have the ability to apply the margins in a smaller way than they will. I think we'll beat them.
Well, I do too. And I think one of the ways I think Tony was also bang on about it'll be one out wide. You know, in a sense, it'll be the battle of the wing backs, and they've got two very good wing backs. But of course, we all know the media ignore this completely. But Trent Alexander-Arnold can't defend, and actually Alonso can't defend either. But he can actually. That's an interesting matchup, really. They can both attack, but they both can't defend. I think Pulisic might be key to that as a watching brief over Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right. I'm not so worried about Robertson. I think James and Aspilicueta can look after him
if he plays.
If he plays, of course, you know, Christensen too, although I'm not so sure about Christensen on the right, but, you know, he did okay in the Champions League. Well, actually, he came up for silver, didn't he, in the Champions League final. But
yeah.
I think the other thing is it's about big game players. And, you know, Alonso's a big game player. Kante's a big game player. You know, Lukaku should be a big game player. And in a sense, he kind of proved it in the Carabao Cup final. Tony was right. That was a bloody goal all day long and a great one too. VAR denied him that. So, you know, maybe our big players will step up tomorrow. And they are not unbeatable, Liverpool. And I do think they look leggy, and they have done over the last, you know, five or six games. So, Martin, I think we beat them out wide again, like we often do beat teams.
Yeah, exploit the spaces they will inevitably leave behind.
And the high line, yeah.
Indeed. Rudiger will have to do a lot of covering for Alonso on that side as well. He's more than capable of doing it. And I think, you know, for some of these players, it will be their last big game for Chelsea. In some cases,
good way to go out.
Their last game. Go out on a high. Do what Hazard did in Baku.
Yeah, absolutely right. So I've got one more thing to do, but I'm going to do the predictions first. JK?
I think we'll win 2-0.
Bloody hope so, mate. Martin?
I'm going to say 2-1 Chelsea, very much coming from the heart there. The head saying otherwise, but you've got to believe.
I'm going to say 2-2 and then penalties, extra time and then penalties, as Chris Waddle says.
And then Kepa will be on.
I've got no idea. But the reason I say that is because I've booked a train up tomorrow, and clearly I've booked a train back in the evening, so I get a cheaper deal. And then I thought about it, and I thought, I know what will happen now. It'll go to extra time, and I won't get that train. I'll have to pay a bit more, I said to myself. So I've now booked a much later train that will allow me to watch extra time and have a beer or two afterwards. So I think it'll go to extra time because I've been clever enough to get a late train. Now, of course, it'll be over in 90 minutes and we might lose and I'll have fuck all to do. But there we go. I can always drown my sorrows. It's not going to happen. 2-2, we'll win on penalties. That's my prediction. And there's another good reason why that's important, because as you all know, I keep on my phone. The boys can just about see it there. They can't really see the detail, because it's a bit, the light's wrong. But in my phone, this is on my bookmarked bits on my phone.
Ecuador, surely that's a cigar.
That is the table of English trophy winners of all time, where we still sit fourth behind Liverpool on top, 44, Man United second on 42, Arsenal third on 30. We have 25 trophies and Man City have 22. And Man City will win the league, I'm sure of that. So we need to win the FA Cup to keep four trophies ahead of Man City. So it's imperative that we win for that reason, if nothing else. So just to wrap up, really, a very exciting show, a good show, I hope. Great to have Tony Evans and Liam on as well. But the last thing I want to talk about, really, is Cup final day, because we've been so many. I mean, I was saying to Martin before we went on air, you know, as I said, I used to be able to remember every Cup final for 20 years as a kid. And now I can't even remember which ones, when Chelsea won it, we've won so many. I mean, it's hard to keep up. So we're used to going to Wembley. So within that come Cup final rituals, I think, Martin. So what are your Cup final day rituals?
I don't really have any, to be honest. I certainly don't have any conscious rituals. I mean, the only thing I would try and do is aim to go to certain pubs, because I've lived near Wembley pretty much for the last 30 years. But invariably, we get the side of the stadium that means the pubs only allow the opposition fans in, and that's the case tomorrow. So I'll probably just head straight there. I don't know what I'll be doing afterwards, but no rituals, no superstitions. I'll leave that to the ones coming from out of town.
Oh, meow. Mate, I had all these superstitions before I moved back out of town, to be honest.
Yeah.
But there you go. JK?
Every cup final, I bake a cake with blue and white icing. And I have to eat it in 35 seconds, the whole cake, or Chelsea won't win. No, I've just made that up. I have no rituals whatsoever, Church.
Really?
Nothing. I don't do anything. No. When I was little, I used to have to look at something twice. I'd look at, say, I look at a policeman by the pitch, and then I'd think, oh, Chelsea will lose if I don't look at the policeman again. It was absolutely bizarre thing that after a bit, I thought, this is such a waste of time and doesn't it seem to have any effect on the game at all. I don't know where I got that one from.
But I think
it's when you got stuck on a traffic light or something, decided you had to stop.
But I think rituals are very different from superstitions, I have to say. So, you know,
it seemed to be associated with superstition as well, because it was Chelsea wouldn't win if I didn't look twice at the police. But no, I just, as long as I will take the same route. I don't go on the down to Wembley Park. I always go up to Marylebone, meet a friend at a pub. I'll have a coffee. In fact, I'm taking my daughter tomorrow so she can have a coffee.
Her first cup final.
Well, she went to the League Cup final. And I said to her, it's Liverpool. Said, no, not again. She said, I said, yeah, it's them again. So, but that's at least you're sitting next to me this time, because she wasn't. She was sitting with a friend. Just go and get the train from Marylebone up to Wembley Central, and then wander up, look at the Blue Arch. And you have to get there slightly early, because they've got these security arches where I've been sitting there, and they take an eternity. So you have to take all your belongings out and put them in one of those trays. You know, it really is quite convoluted. And it's going to Club Wembley, except you don't get any of the perks of Club Wembley. You don't get anything, get a meal or anything. You just, it's the space. So, I'll get there quite early, I think, and just breathe in the atmosphere and listen to the very, very loud music that I have nothing to do with anymore, that she likes. She'll like that. And observe all the fans arriving slowly, have another coffee, and ease into it. And then the butterflies, they'll descend upon me.
And abide with me, of course.
Oh, yeah. I will sing that. I will be singing all the words, Jim.
Yeah, I love that.
It'll be up on the screen, and I'll be singing along, and people will be giving me funny looks, but I will sing it.
No, I will too, I think. I will too. I normally do. I mean, as I said, I think rituals are different from superstitions. But I mean, if I have a ritual that has been happening way before I turned up on the scene, really, but this goes back, or is it? I think, I don't know. I need to talk to Neil Smith about this and Psycho Phil. My impression was that they have been going to the Victoria pub in Paddington for a long time. But I may be wrong on that. But, I mean, obviously, since 2007, because, of course, we were in Cardiff before that. I wasn't at the 2001. So, I mean, every final that I've been to, every semi-final that I've been to since really 2002, I have... Actually, no, because it would be 2007 when it reopened, wasn't it? So every final since then, or semi-final since then, I've been drinking in the Victoria in Paddington before the match, and it's lovely because you see the same faces there every time, and all of our lot, a lot of our lot go there. So I'll see Dan Silver tomorrow, Darren Mantle, load of other people. I hope that the Marco from Germany will be there in his Lederhosen and his little silver cardboard FA Cup. He's a big San Paoli fan, but I always meet him there. And Smithy will be there. Lovely people that I've known for a long time. And Ash Pinto. Ash Pinto's coming over from Toronto, and I managed to get Ash a ticket, which is just beautiful. And he's flying in the morning, for fuck's sake. So his flight gets in about 11 at Gatwick. So it's going to be tight. Tight as a tiger. So I'm bloody hoping he turns up in time, because that's going to be a bit squeaky bum. But
He'll make it.
Well, indeed. So there we go. So that's my only ritual, really. I mean, back in the days of yore, we used to, if we won, we'd all go back to the Blackbird in Earl's Court and get absolutely hammered and throw celery all over the place. But that tradition seems to have died a bit of a death recently. But that's the only one, really, other than just loving it. I'm going to be sitting with Pablo and a couple of his mates tomorrow. Sadly, Stu and Sam and Nick couldn't make it, but it's nice to be sitting with people. I think I've sat with Pablo in pretty much every final I've been to. Or certainly Stu. And Stu can't make it because he's got COVID, bless him. So, yeah, it's a proper old day out. I do love a cup final, and I love
it. If we win, Chidge, will there be a bus tour? There ought to be.
Well, I doubt they'll be allowed to have one. because of the cost associated with putting it on. They're very off doing it because of the cost of putting it on anyway. The police slap.
Wouldn't be able to pay for it, would
no.
they?
No. And the police slap a great big bill on them. That's what's put them off recently. So, yeah. But anyway, as I said, I'm going to go out there, enjoy it. And it's a great day out. But it's much better when you win, of course. And that's what it's all about when it comes to finals. So good luck to the boys. Good luck to Tommy Tuchel. I hope they manage to pull it off because we need that trophy. And we need to beat the Scousers, of course. Boys, what a lovely delight doing an FA Cup final preview show. We're all going. It's fantastic. You know, everybody on the fan cast is going. Might see a few of them tomorrow, give them a bit of a wave. We're all in different places, aren't we? But there you go. Martin, been cracking to see you on the show, as always.
Cheers, thank you very much. And let's hope we get the right result tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. JK, absolute pleasure, as always.
Thank you. On the show, yes, the butterflies are starting now. Yes.
I wanted to ask you, did you get on ITV today?
Yes.
What? Tell me about it.
I was with two boys from Talk Sport, neither of whose names I've remembered, who were excellent. Blimey, they knew their stuff. Only going to use
Talk Sport and excellent. I'm not so sure about that.
I think they're producers. I don't think they're presenters, to be fair to them. Well, I just thought they talked very, very profoundly about Chelsea and expertly. And and we had the idea was just to have a conversation between the three of us about the new owners and the prospects for tomorrow. And we did that and they filmed it and they said they'd only use a minute of it as we spoke for about 20 minutes. I'll be intrigued to see how they edit it.
Yeah.
So, you know. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun. There were a couple of good guys. I'll find their names and I'll tell you. But I wanted to give a shout out to Max, who I sat next to at, stood next to, I should say, at Leeds, who hit me on the head while doing Carefree and apologised. And I said, it's all right, mate. I should have predicted you were going to do that. And he went, oh, my goodness, I recognise your voice. You're Jonathan. he said I listen to the fan cast, I love it. And I said, oh, thank you, mate. I'll give you a shout out to Max, who I enjoyed standing next to and hearing. And I joined in occasionally with the odd chant with you. So
Jimmy Savile is one of your own.
Funnily enough, I didn't do that.
Okay, funnily that. Anyway, there you go. Fame at last, JK. Delighted to hear it. Well done, Max. Be kind, be gentle with JK. We need him, mate. The show would be half the show without him, that's for sure. Right, we will be back on Monday, of course, for the main Chelsea Fancast show with JK, me, and Mark Worrell and Mark Meehan, the two Marks, at 7 p.m. That's the FA Cup dream team, as far as I'm concerned. So, obviously, we'll be looking back at the Cup final against Liverpool and ahead to Thursday night's match against Leicester. So, there we go. Don't miss it. For the people in Mixlr, I salute you, as always. Lovely to see so many of you in there. Enjoy the day wherever you're watching it tomorrow. Let's hope we bring it home. Come on, Chelsea. Up for the Cup. Right. Yes. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, and keep it Chels.
Oh, that's you! Oh, you big boy. In the final, it's weekend, gamma.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.